City and state governments around the world are following El Salvador's lead and considering Bitcoin as a balance sheet asset to protect against monetary inflation and currency debasement. Last year, the city of Vancouver announced its intention to follow that strategy and become a Bitcoin-friendly city. This week, we are joined by the mayor of Vancouver, Ken Sim, for a conversation about its Bitcoin journey and where we could be headed for Bitcoin and the future of Vancouver. I'm Scott Deedles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. Individual savers face the same challenges that governments do in planning for the future using a currency that continually becomes worth less over time. This week's episode is a conversation about why cities should think about saving in Bitcoin, but a lot of those same reasons apply to individual people. Hopefully, Mayor Sim's insights will help you make sense of why. Thanks for tuning in. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week, we have a very special guest joining us from the city of Vancouver, Mayor Ken Sim. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me. By the way, you can just call me Ken. It's all good.
Okay. I could have clarified that off the air, but I appreciate that. Thank you. So exciting times for Vancouver. You made sort of waves towards the end of last year announcing this plan for the intention of Vancouver towards becoming a Bitcoin-friendly city. And that's what we're going to be talking about on the show today. Maybe for the benefit of our listeners or people who might be tuning in to you for the first time, how did your journey with Bitcoin get started? Before you, obviously, before you were married, you were probably aware of Bitcoin and
Well, you know, it actually goes back to I think probably 2018, 2019, and my one of my boys, Mitchell, he said, "God, he must have been like 13 at the time or whatever." He said, "Dad, I want to buy some Bitcoin," and I said, "You touch that shit and I'm going to punch you in the throat." You know, I want to give you some context here. And I say this, it's going to sound a little arrogant, but there's a happy ending to it. So I'm a chartered accountant, former investment banker, private equity. And so I must be the smartest person on the planet, right? And so I said it with conviction, don't touch that crap. And then, you know, I got a little curious and I have a friend, his name's Jeff Booth. So he knows quite a bit about the topic. Then I read a bunch of books, but at the time, like 12 books, I'm probably at about 30 books now on Bitcoin, crypto, money, you know, the Bitcoin standard, layered when money dies, token economy, you know, the list goes on and on. Went to a bunch of conferences and spoke with a bunch of thought leaders. And then I apologized to my son and it's like, yeah, I was pretty dumb and they were absolutely right. And so I bought my first $500 worth of Satoshis back on November the 14th, 2020.
Never looked back.
Never looked back.
You've since said that Bitcoin is the greatest invention ever in human history, which is quite a statement. I was wondering if you might be able to just kind of qualify that. And, you know, why would Bitcoin in your mind qualify for such a lofty title?
Yeah. And like... you know, I think, you know, when I compare it to, let's say, air travel or the internet or cars. Yeah, absolutely. I actually think in substance, it's more important than that. And so, you know, Bitcoin is the only invention in human history that is completely finite. I can't think of another thing that has 100% scarcity around it. And it's significant because when you look at money, we have a glitch in our money, which is the ability of, you know, people or countries to print more of it. And so they can effectively make it worthless. And through that, lots of wars have been fought, you know, currencies have been debased, life savings of individuals have been, you know, robbed of people. The list goes on and on, right? And so when you look at Bitcoin, it actually solves that glitch. And now people can store their value, all their hard-earned money, into the future, and wars won't last as long. People will change the way on how they're actually, you know, in sort of encouraged to save now. So the list goes on and on. And so for the first time ever, we have something that actually works. And so all of a sudden it is actually bigger than the internet or flight or cars, because with all due respect, and I know Bitcoin went to be existed without the internet, but you know, in human history, there was a time where we didn't have the internet, we didn't have flying or planes, and we didn't have cars. And guess what? human civilization went on with this glitch, but now we've got rid of this glitch and we can actually change all of humanity because of it. So it's actually a pretty profound idea. It takes a lot more time to unpack, but it's incredible.
Yeah, no, obviously I agree with you. It's an interesting thing because I think most people who are on their Bitcoin journey start with either being skeptical or think that it's some sort of novelty, and getting to a place where you understand that it is actually a really significant thing because of this problem of infinite money and the elegant solution of a finite money, which on its own is actually a fairly, although it's a sort of straightforward, I guess because everyone has spent their entire lives living in the infinite money system, it's just what we've all lived with. So it doesn't seem normal, even though everyone is simultaneously aware of the problem of things getting progressively more expensive and life getting harder as a result. So we are in this interesting time now where you're seeing, I guess, particularly in the United States, at the state level, there is a growing interest in at different levels of government in Bitcoin. And so in your mind, why would Bitcoin be useful or important for municipalities or state provincial governments? Like what is the application for finite money in your mind? Like just to make it as simple as possible for people who are trying to understand, like
to make it as simple as possible, city governments, municipal or state governments, provincial governments, national governments, we basically are in the same system as regular people. You know, we buy stuff, be it concrete or, you know, raw materials. We hire people. So if you're like any other company, you have to hire people. And when you look at the rate of debasement, and I think it's between 10 and 15% per year. It doesn't matter in our households or in the city of Vancouver. We can make things as efficient as possible. We can do all the right things. And over time, we can't outrun that debasement. And so if knowing that this is happening and knowing we can't outrun it, we have to look at how we protect ourselves. And you can make an argument for gold. Gold's a great store of value, you know, but it is, you know, it's like comparing a fax machine to AI when you compare gold to Bitcoin. Bitcoin's just far superior on a bunch of levels. And so when we, you know, when we add the store of value, all of a sudden we protect ourselves from this rapid debasement. And it sets us up so we can actually afford the services that we want to provide in the city, be it policing, fire rescue services, sanitation engineers. We'll be able to, you know, be on a solid financial footing. So maybe I'll give you a different example. So housing prices. I think everyone's familiar with them. Vancouver is a very expensive place to have a house. If I were to tell you that house prices haven't changed in the city in the last 100 years, you'd probably think I was an idiot, right? Most people would. And so I looked at some data and I went back to 1995. And in 1995, the average house price in Vancouver was $500,000. And at the end of 2022, it was $2.43 million, or it went up 383%. So that sounds right, doesn't it? That sounds kind of right. And like in other cities, you can make a similar argument. Well, interesting fact, the average house in 1995, when priced in gold, cost 958 ounces. At the end of 2022, it cost 957 ounces. It remained flat. So the value of gold didn't go up. The house price didn't go up. The purchasing power of our dollars went down. And so at the city of Vancouver, we're sitting on $3.2 billion of cash, and it's losing 10 to 15% of its value per year. We're losing $400 million a year in purchasing power just by it sitting there. And so I would rather have it sitting in an asset that doesn't lose its purchasing power, so it will be available to us in the future when we need it.
Those are humongous numbers, staggering numbers. So what is your response to people who might be concerned about like the potential longevity of Bitcoin? Because, you know, as we're comparing gold and Bitcoin, this is one thing that always comes up. Obviously, gold has a much longer track record because it's been around for so much longer. In thinking about allocating city funds instead of your own personal wealth, I guess this is one consideration, the long-term durability of Bitcoin. And what are your thoughts on that subject?
Well, there's a couple of things. So are you asking gold versus Bitcoin, or are you asking about Bitcoin in general?
Bitcoin in general.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just go back to first principles. If you believe in the rate of debasement is happening, and just look at your grocery bill. Over the last 5 years, it's probably doubled. Is that fair to say? Okay, so we know what this is happening. We know it will continue to happen just based on the deficit and debt levels of the US and Canada and pretty much every single other country out there. The only outcome is printing more cash, and we can talk about that if you want. But assuming that happens, it is certain that the value, the purchasing power of our dollars are going to go down. So if you do nothing, we're going to lose. Okay. So knowing that, really, the only choice now is to look at an asset class like Bitcoin or gold. But Bitcoin, let's see, it's been the number one performing asset on the planet 11 out of the last 14 years. It's been the number one performing asset on the planet for the last 16 years on average. You know, I don't like, it's almost ridiculous not to even look at this stuff. And people sometimes are afraid of new technology. Well, the technology has been around for 16 years. And the underlying technology is rock solid. It's protected by a wall of energy. It's never been hacked. Now, exchanges have been hacked, but that has nothing to do with the underlying Bitcoin blockchain. There's a million Bitcoin sitting in Satoshi's wallet for everyone to see. And it's been, people have tried to hack it. No one's been successful over 16 years. That is more secure than anything else out there. Any bank, any nation state, all these groups have been hacked. Bitcoin hasn't. So if anything, I question whether or not we should be holding money in banks and stuff, because it's not super protected, whereas Bitcoin is. So, it's rock solid.
So how do you think about, obviously, the concept of public entities holding Bitcoin as a sort of defensive asset itself is a very new idea. And I can imagine that as we start to see public bodies inching into this, it will probably be small positions as the public bodies sort of gain comfort with it. How should municipalities or public entities think about right-sizing a position in Bitcoin, given, like you said, with $3.2 billion in cash sitting there, the entirety of that amount is exposed to this 10% annual haircut. So how much Bitcoin is the responsible amount for a public body to own?
Yeah. So, okay, great question. And first of all, I do have to qualify for everything I've said on this podcast, and everything I will say on this podcast is not investment advice. I'm not qualified to give investment advice, and I am not giving investment advice. So, now, the big thing in Bitcoin is don't trust, verify. I would highly advise anyone who's watching this, don't take our word for it. Do your own homework. Come up with your own conclusion. I think it really depends. You know, for me, I'd like to see a more significant weighting. You know, I know the rule of thumb right now that's being proposed is 1-3%. I actually think it should be a lot higher, but, you know, there are other factors to consider. And we do take our revenues in dollars. We have expenses in dollars. And so, we do also have a fiduciary duty to, you know, make sure, because I don't think this is a bad thing. Like, I think the volatility is a good thing. But, you know, when you're trying to match revenues and expenses, you got to make sure, you can pay your bills. And the Bitcoin would be a longer term asset that you don't have to dispose of. But yeah, I think that if you truly, if you do your homework and you come to the conclusion that this thing is going to be around for a long time and currency will debase relative to Bitcoin, why would you want to be in any asset that's based in fiat currency?
Yeah, me, I could agree more. So in thinking about this notion of Vancouver becoming a Bitcoin-friendly city, you know, obviously one application of this is holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet in a defensive way. There are lots of ways people are using Bitcoin all around the world. What are some other ways you might envision Bitcoin becoming a part of the way Vancouver, life in Vancouver operates?
Yeah, on the balance sheet is the big one. If you believe that it's a solid asset and it's going to appreciate relative to everything else, that's the primary. And in fact, with what's going on in the U.S., could finalize a Bitcoin reserve, which will require them to, put 1 million Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and they only have 100,000. I learned this actually in El Salvador. I thought they had 200,000, but they have to return 100,000 evidently. So they're going to be buyers of 900,000 Bitcoin, which is whatever, 14, 16 years worth of production. So, you know, and that's before anyone else buys a single Bitcoin. So the opportunity is we have to get on it now or as quickly as possible, because you have organizations like BlackRock and ARK Investments and Fidelity and, pension funds and nation states like El Salvador and Bhutan and UAE, 22 or 24, it changes by the minute, number of states that are all looking at putting this on a reserve as well. That, you know, Czechia, they're looking at doing it, their central bank. So the list goes on and on. And so the primary is getting it on the balance sheet. Now, there are other applications for sure, like accepting Bitcoin, transacting in Bitcoin. That can, you know, we'd like to do that too, but that's a later thing. You know, we have time for that. And, you know, the tax regulation in Canada needs to change to make that super effective. You know, Ed, I don't know if you're like, I'm sure most of your viewers know this, but in Canada, every time you transact, it's like a disposition of an asset and you either have a capital gain or a loss every time you use Bitcoin, which is, you know, it's ridiculous if you want to treat it like currency. So the tax code has to catch up, but transacting in Bitcoin would be great as well. We do those two things. It really sends a signal to the rest of the world that we are serious about this. This is not just that, you know, try to get a couple of votes here or there. In fact, it probably costs us votes because we're early and some people still think we're quacks because they're not up on it yet, but it's the right thing to do. We do this. We attract talent from around the planet that start to move their businesses to Vancouver, and they build the ecosystem here. They work on the Lightning Network layer two, and this becomes a really Bitcoin-friendly city. And it already is a Bitcoin-friendly city. So it'll just, you know, build on all the incredible work that the ecosystem has done here and make it even better.
Yeah, I was going to say that as you were talking, it could be accidental or at least a fortunate coincidence that the Vancouver Bitcoiners chapter is pretty significant, and there's been a fairly wide adoption of the Lightning Network by merchants in the Vancouver area, thanks to the fellows at CoinHouse who came on the show about a year ago. And
they're great.
Pardon me?
They're great.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any comments around why we haven't seen more mayors take this position so far? Like, do you feel like we are heading towards a broader, you know, consideration of this, or are we still pretty early in your mind? Like, is this something you maybe comes up when are you getting questions from other mayors about this?
Not a lot, actually. I spoke with the mayor of Santa Monica. She's great and she's on their journey. And you know, I run into the occasional politician, like Mayor Suarez a few years ago in Miami. I met him in Austin, Texas before I was mayor, and I was asking him questions, and you know, he gets it as well. But for the most part, no, the mayors don't really want to talk about it because there's a lot of political risk. We're still early. And what politicians do in general is everything they do is calculated, and they're trying to count the number of votes. And even though that there are Bitcoiners that are closeted, there are still way more people that think this is sort of quack science, that it's a Ponzi scheme and it's bad for the environment and it's used for illegal activity and all the stuff that's been debunked. But most people feel that way. And so as a politician, you take a massive risk, you know, talking about this. And so I think the politicians, once it happens, they'll start to jump on board. But for the most part, they're going to be laggards. Now, the good thing is we've seen what can happen. So in the US, and I don't care, you know, actually, it's not that I don't care, you know, ignore the political environment. It doesn't really matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether you like one party versus the other. That's not the point. The point is there's a new president who has, you know, expressed an interest in adding it to the strategic reserve. And then you had a bunch of states one by one by one by one really quickly pile on. And so, you know, this is another classic example, kind of like Parker Lewis talks about it. You know, it's, you know, gradually, then suddenly. It takes a long time and then bam, it'll happen. And maybe that happens with mayors across Canada at some point in time where this thing is safe for them to dip their political toes and they'll all come on board. Because it actually is pretty sound, in my humble opinion, that we should be doing it.
Hey, everyone, quick question. Have you ever thought about starting a video podcast like this one? I want to introduce you to the team behind my show, Podigy. This podcast has been one of the best marketing tools for our business. And thanks to Podigy, all I have to do is hit record. They handle everything else, editing, writing, publishing, and making sure that it's perfectly optimized for every platform. They only work with disruptors, mavericks, and change makers, people making a real difference, spreading big ideas. Typically, Podigy is fully booked, but right now they have a few spots open for new clients. Listeners of this show get 10% off launching their own podcast or optimizing their current one. Click the link in the bio for a free one-on-one podcast planning session with Podigy. If you are thinking about starting a podcast or you have one and you want to take it to the next level, I can't recommend Podigy enough. Check them out. One of the things that has really, you know, kind of baffled me over the last 4 or 5 years is as MicroStrategy has accumulated more and more, it's really like such public limelight that other sort of C-suite level executives haven't seemed to study Michael Saylor's playbook. I mean, you are seeing a handful now proliferate, but considering how well the stock has performed, you really haven't seen what seems to be a mass like copycat strategy for there either, which has been a bit of a surprise.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'm not knocking Harvard University because, you know, I'm not smart enough to get into Harvard. Let me put it this way. But, you know, he actually did a little piece on, he was asked to speak at Harvard University to the business class there. And they were talking about MicroStrategy and their game plan. And basically, MicroStrategy had no choice. Basically, they're sitting on whatever, $500 million of cash, and it was losing 15% or $75 million a year. And they, you know, they were faced with, do we just give the money back to the shareholders? Do we wind up the company? What do we do? And so they did a lot of work and they chose Bitcoin, and the rest is history. And so knowing this, the prof then asked all the students that are going to arguably the best business school on the planet, and would you do this? And one by one, they said no, right? Even though it had been done and it had been proven to work and there's no other alternative anyways, they said no. So I'm not surprised. Initially I was surprised, but the more, you know, I go through this journey here, the more I understand, like, it's hard to move people over. Now, the positive thing, I also think we're in the right spot. Like, Jeff Booth has a really good example. He talks about, he was like a Galileo. Was it Galileo? Jeez, I'd have to say.
The model of the universe.
Yeah. Basically looks out and, you know, into the sky with the telescope and sees, oh, wait a sec, we have this all wrong. And then he comes back and starts telling all these people, and they all think he's an idiot. And it took something like 330 years before the church said, you guys were right. So, you know, we're fighting legacy systems and we're fighting, you know, people that don't have access to a telescope. That's what this Bitcoin journey is right now. But hopefully people come along a lot faster, because once you look through, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
You mentioned environmental impact, and I'm sure some of the political flack comes from people who are under the impression that Bitcoin has a negative impact on the environment. And this is, I think, particularly relevant in British Columbia, because BC Hydro has made it difficult for electrical connections for the proliferation of Bitcoin mining in BC. What's your take on the real environmental impact of Bitcoin and what it might mean for BC?
I think Bitcoin's going to solve our environmental challenges. Period, full stop. And everything we've been led to believe is completely wrong. So, you know, the narrative out there is Bitcoin's terribly consumes so much energy and it's terrible for the environment. Well, yeah, it does consume a lot of energy, and we can talk about that and why that's actually a good thing. You know, the reason why fiat currency is worthless is because, or it's becoming worthless, is it doesn't cost anything to print. You can just produce more of it. And so when something takes a lot of energy to produce, like gold, it's a store of value. And then once people can store their value, guess what? You don't have to do dumb things like, you know, grow the size of your company every year to produce more and more stuff that people don't want, which is terrible for the environment because you're just trying to keep up. Okay. So that's like the bigger, really harder thing to explain. But this is why in the short term, it's great for the environment. One. Natural gas, when you flare it off, terrible for the environment. And it's a byproduct of, you know, processing, like producing oil. Okay. Well, if you repurpose that and you use it to mine Bitcoin, actually, it's less damaging for the environment. So that's a no-brainer right there. methane, capturing methane that seeps out of the ground through you know, garbage dumps or what have you. When you repurpose that and you use that methane that's leaking, you create Bitcoin, but you also like reduce the amount of pollutants that go into the atmosphere. Clean energy, green energy products that never see the light of day because the economics don't handle. Well, Bitcoin miners are location agnostic, so they will support, they'll buy all the excess energy. So a project up north, for example, that would never see the light of day and would never get financed, these miners provide all the demand for it. They get built. And then what happens next is now that they're built, the local community that didn't have access to green power has access to green power, and they're willing to pay more than Bitcoin miners. And so they do. And then the miners move on to the next project. And so it's actually great for the environment. It reduces our carbon pollutants, and it actually will help us build more green energy products or projects. So the narrative is completely opposite of the reality.
Yeah, it's a huge problem to fix, especially here. I think as we have such an opportunity with hydroelectricity. You mentioned innovation, and I wanted to come back there as well, because wondering in your mind, the benefits beyond sort of preserving financial war chest, like what are the other things, side benefits that Vancouver could potentially expect as a leader in this Bitcoin space?
Well, the ecosystem, like around the planet. See, the challenge that we have being in North America is we don't see the problem yet because we haven't been exposed to a currency that has collapsed. We haven't seen a run on our banks. We haven't seen all the negative effects of hyperinflation, but other places have. And so, you know, why I go there is there are other places in the world where you have incredible adoption. There's over 500 million people that use Bitcoin or have a wallet right now, and it's growing at an exponential rate. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're at a billion in the next 2 years and it just keeps growing. Knowing that, and knowing that it's highly probable, in my opinion, and only in my opinion, that it's going to be, you know, we're going to be on a Bitcoin standard. And it's going to be the currency of the future. We have an opportunity to make Vancouver a Bitcoin-friendly city and have all like the current thought leaders and the people that are creating the network in Vancouver, creating opportunity, creating jobs, you know, the know-how being here. Why wouldn't we want that?
What would a Bitcoin standard mean for like how we operate our government in our current ways? Is this obviously this with having money that can't be confiscated? Is one wrinkle and change the way things currently work. There would probably be a lot of things to think about for reimagining how we govern ourselves in a different monetary system. Any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I think it'll bring a calmness to the city in terms of, you know, the city, like when we're paying in Canadian dollars, you know, the conversation we have all the time is like, hurry up, build this project because next year is going to cost more, right? And you know, the cost, like if we wait 3 years, we won't be able to afford it anymore. What we're really saying is the value of our money is going down and we all know it. And so if we had, you know, our resources anchored in an asset that doesn't depreciate, all of a sudden we can be a lot more thoughtful and we don't have to worry about things getting away from us. And in fact, you know, one outcome will be if Bitcoin appreciate, or if everything depreciates a lot faster than we think, which, you know, in today's language means Bitcoin appreciates a lot, you know, our projects in the future will cost less than they do now. And so that's actually not a bad.
Yeah, that's an exciting thing to think about. I think that we could all benefit from governments being able to have a lower time preference with their large project decision making, for sure. How long in your mind is this a project that takes 2 years or 10 years? Or, you know, if you could be, you know, your most optimistic self, what does this journey for Vancouver look like in terms of how long it might take?
I'm hoping it takes 6 months or less, but there's about a bunch of ifs there. So it's a three-stage process. And what I do want to reiterate again, this was not a virtue signaling exercise where we thought, okay, we'll just make an announcement and some people will think we're cool and we called it a day. We're actually doing this. So the first step was basically getting a motion passed saying we wanted our staff to explore adding Bitcoin or making Vancouver a Bitcoin city, friendly city. And I can't tell you how hard that was. It's crazy. Like to explore something basically means, hey, why don't you take a look? And like it's harmless. But because of the negative connotations out there, it took a lot of work just to get that motion passed. So that was passed in the spring. Our team members at the city will come back with a report, and we have to get that passed as well. And so it's going to be a tough one. But the good thing is we have a by-election coming up on April 5th, and we can potentially win two more spots on council with those individuals. You know, we know where their views are on, fiscal responsibility in Bitcoin. So it looks like they'll support any good policy around that. So that will help us. And once we pass that, the third step, which is going to be, incredibly hard, is getting the province on board, because we need their permission to make this happen. And so, they've already said they're not going to do it, and that's fine. You know, we just have to educate them, and we have to get the community out and, let them know that this is the real deal. And there's a big voter block as well in the Bitcoin community if they come out and vote, and that could swing another election in the future, be it a provincial or federal election. And there are enough people that want this to actually see why this makes sense, that, you know, I think it's up to the province to get up to speed really quickly, as opposed to falling into, and I'm not knocking them at all. We have a really great relationship, and I'm not going to knock anyone who isn't up to speed on Bitcoin. But, provincially elected officials have a fiduciary responsibility to get up to speed on this and make an informed decision on it. And we expect them to do it, and we'll help them in that journey.
Yeah. I can't help but wonder that there is probably a substantial obstacle that results from the Bank of Canada sold all its gold. And over the course of sort of 2020, 2021, we had a number of high profile federal level politicians attacking Bitcoin. Bitcoin became a flashpoint for attacks on some members of the Conservative Party who had suggested it was potentially a way to opt out of inflation when then the price went down. This is one of like the most poorly understood concepts of Bitcoin, is how the price in dollars can go down, but it hasn't lost any of its properties that made it valuable when the price was higher. And I guess if you have 2 minutes or 5 minutes to get a point like that across, like what is the one thing that you need someone to understand about Bitcoin before they hold their judgments?
In terms of value or the environment or illegal activity or like...
I guess we could pick any. Is there one for you that stands out higher as more important than any of the others?
A couple of the illegal activity and the financial, and we talked about the environment. But the illegal activity, it's actually kind of foolish. First of all, anyone who understands Bitcoin understands it's an immutable record, and you can track everything that's ever happened there. And so only the dumb criminals, and Elizabeth Warren believes that this is a great place for organized crime and scammers to do their business, because it's a place where you get caught. Let's just say for a moment that it was a valid argument and we should shut it down because it's used for illegal activity. If you're going to use that as a basis, then you have to ban all cell phones because they're used for illegal activity. You have to ban the internet, because think of all the scams that happen on the internet. You have to ban cars, because those are used in illegal activity. And you have to ban cash, because cash is probably, you know, most illegal activity, be it in, let's say, the downtown east side or with organized crime, whatever, they use cash because it's not traceable. So while we ban those four things or five things or whatever number of things those are. So it's a ridiculous argument. And then you add on the fact that because it's an immutable record and you can track everything and everything can get caught, and the actual number of illegal activities used on the Bitcoin blockchain are almost non-existent, you actually want it. You actually want it. It will make our place safer. So that's the myth that I would debunk there. And then when it comes to the financial aspect, once again, you know, there is volatility, which is a good thing. You know, I used the example, and this was given to me by someone that came in to speak, a professor out at UBC, who's just brilliant, or SFU, who's brilliant. He said, well, you know, when you look at volatility, if you had a hockey team, do you bring on Wayne Gretzky, or do you bring on, you know, a consistent third line center? Third line center won't have any volatility and will provide 15 goals a year, a season, or you have Wayne Gretzky. Right? Like he's volatile. So you look at Bitcoin, number one performing asset, 11 of the last 14 years and 16 years overall. So I don't know. It's fine. If you're a trader, you know, a day trader, it's probably not the asset for you. If you think in long, very long terms, it's the asset for you.
Maybe just one final question for you. If you can answer this or not, but the institutions have taken different approaches with what they actually do with the Bitcoin that they bought. And I'm wondering if you could comment on whether, if successful, the city would be, you know, sort of buying investment derivative Bitcoin products like ETFs or actual Bitcoin. And, you know, how would the city think about actually owning Bitcoin?
You know, first, we'd have to wait for the report to come back. I don't know what they're going to say. Personally, I would actually buy the Bitcoin, you know, for a whole host of reasons. You know, one thing is we can secure it. Everything else technically is confiscatable. Even if you own MicroStrategy, right? Like that could get shut down at any point in time, or the US could pull up whatever, what is it called? A 6102, right? And they could just say, you know what, we want to, you know, create a Bitcoin strategic reserve. MicroStrategy, you have whatever number now, 500, 600,000 Bitcoin. We'll pay you for it, but basically now we own you. We own your Bitcoin. So maybe that happens, right? So now you don't own the Bitcoin. With ETFs, you still have a management fee. So, you know, what we're doing is, you know, low risk, no risk, long-term, you know, 100-year style vehicle. And so personally, I would go for the Bitcoin, you know, like, and take it, you know, off the exchange. Now you prompted, something, you know, talking about financial institutions. There are a lot of financial institutions that will still say, do not buy Bitcoin. And they advise their clients not to, which, you know, I find hypocritical, because these same institutions have actually bought Bitcoin, for themselves, either directly or indirectly or through ETFs. So I think Bank of Montreal, has $139 million worth of Bitcoin. RBC, through their acquisition of HSBC, has $6 million. Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan. Jamie Dimon goes out there and says, no, it's crap. They have $1.35 billion worth of Bitcoin for themselves, not their clients, for themselves. And so I feel, based on that data, that information, these banks are just front-running everyone. They're getting their positions in place before they accept it, which I feel a little, I think it's a little disingenuous. And so the world is adopting it. You know, it's going to happen because the smart money is already there.
And then, and there was in January positive legislation for American retail banks to move forward with architecture to start holding Bitcoin for clients. Yeah, I agree. Mr. Mayor, I want to thank again for coming on. And maybe as we start to sort of wrap up, any sort of final thoughts, on any of these subjects, or any way that Bitcoin listeners can help you out as you approach this by-election? How can Bitcoiners help you achieve this mission?
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is, if you live in Vancouver, come and vote for the two ABC. I'm only answering your question, right? If you believe that this is important, I can tell you everyone that's running against, or everyone who's running in that election who is not part of ABC is 100% against bringing Bitcoin to the city of Vancouver. And so if you think it's important, please come out and vote. Visit our website, abcvancouver.ca, if you want to support the movement. That's the first thing. Second thing, and this is not just the city of Vancouver thing. I'm a proud Canadian, and we want to, you know, help any other municipality or province or the federal government embrace this as well. And so if you need me to come and speak with one of your local mayors or MLAs or MPs, reach out to me, and we'll fight the good fight on behalf of you guys and to spread the word, because this is super important. This is about the future of our cities, our provinces, and our country, and it's a fight worth fighting.
As someone who understands what's what you're doing, I want to thank you, and I applaud your efforts, and understand how hard it can be to be an early mover in the space. So I wish you the most success, and I am rooting for you for this to happen. So thank you, and thank you again for coming on the show. This has been a real treat. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in, and we hope to see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes.
Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. BlockRewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and VMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.